Hello, everyone. I'm Rob Wolf, and welcome to episode number 73 of Unformatable, where we take a look at some of the less heralded myths in our beloved franchise's quirky history, because to us, every player who dons the orange and blue is in some way unformatable. As I record this, the 2021 World Series chugs along with some unlikable organizations battling it out. Hard to find too many more obscure Met players in the team's World Series lore. Those are naturally memorable teams with memorable players. However, I did just recently, kind of by coincidence, although I usually in October and March like to find some baseball books to read, I recently read Ron Darling's Game 7. Just happened to come upon it in a used book sale in an upstate library. Not as good a read as the complete game, but it's always nice to read something and hear Ronnie's voice in your head, especially since the only baseball voices currently left are John Smoltz and Joe Buck. But at any rate, I had forgotten that a less prominent member of the 1986 Red Sox bullpen than Calvin Schiraldi had a brief tenure with the Mets in 1985 as well. The former All-Star lefty reliever and Brooklyn native, Joe Sambito. Joseph Charles Sambito was born on June 28th, 1952, in Brooklyn, New York, where I sit right now. Probably not in the same spot of Brooklyn, I'm gonna guess. But it's a very quintessentially Brooklyn story. Sambito is the first child of first-generation Americans. All four of his grandparents had immigrated from Italy, and his parents grew up approximately 150 feet from each other in their neighborhood in Brooklyn. As many a cliched immigrant story goes, Sambito's father loved baseball, found it a way to connect to his new country, and transferred that love to his son. One of Joe's earliest memories in an interview I read with them was of the 1958 World Series, where the Yankees came back from 3-1 down to beat the Braves, which is a scenario that could potentially play itself out again, sans Yankees this year. We shall see. But Sambito took that love and played and excelled at Bethpage High School, where he was scouted, although not drafted out of high school, and he had, whether the scholarship affected that or not, he had accepted a scholarship to Adelphi University, where he became that institution's first ever All-American in 1973 when he pitched to a 1.27 ERA. So having been scouted in high school and in college and pitching well in college, Sambito expected to be drafted early and had people in his camp in his ear telling him to expect to go in the top five rounds of the draft. But apparently rumors of a sore arm kind of tanked his draft stock and dropped him to the 17th round, where he was selected by the Houston Astros, who drafted him but promptly told him they'd need to see him throw before even offering him a contract. And the rumors were in fact true. Sambito did have a sore arm, but he gutted through it in the tryout, convinced the Astros to give him a shot, and was assigned to AA after he signed his contract. According to what I read, the minors were thinned out at that time due to the enrollment in the Vietnam War. So he went straight to AA, where he had one horrible game. His arm problems flared back up, and now with a not very lucrative signing bonus, but a member of the organization, he reported his arm problems and was rested for 6 weeks before looking better, rehabbing at the end of 73 in rookie ball. Sambito, if you know some of his story or his reputation, would really be known as a reliever and one of the better relievers in the National League for a decent period of time, but with a strong fastball, sharp slider, devastating on lefties in particular, but by no means just a lefty specialist, not that that existed in the late 70s, early 80s so much. But though he would ultimately become a notable all-star reliever, he excelled as a starter in the minors, but got the call to the majors right after the 1976 All-Star break, and almost immediately went to the bullpen, where he enjoyed pitching and began to thrive. He made his major league debut on July 20th, 1976, the first game of a doubleheader. The Astros starter got pulled after six batters, recording only one out. So the nervous 23-year-old came in to make his major league debut with the bases loaded, one out, his team already down 2-0, and those jitters showed. His first four pitches were wild, walking in one inherited run, and his next pitch was a triple to deep center by Manny Sanguin that cleared the bases. But he would eventually settle down and settle in, eat up 4 2/3 innings in his debut, allowing 3 runs on 7 hits. Over the remainder of that rookie campaign, he would appear in 20 games, turning in relatively solid relief work, earning his first career save late in the season, one of those 3 innings in a blowout variety saves where he took over from J.R. Richard in a 14-5 Astros win, and he even started 4 games that season. He would only start one more over the rest of his career, and almost just to show he could do it, one of those 4 starts was a complete game 4-hit shutout over the Cardinals for his second career win. But his future would be in the bullpen, and after 76, he would establish himself as one of the best relievers in baseball. As one of those Cardinals victims in that 76 shutout, Keith Hernandez would often attest that Zambito was such a difficult out, or I should say a difficult matchup for him and for most lefties he felt in the game. Zambito really had an incredible run from basically from 1977 to 1981. In 1977, he appeared in 54 games, throwing 89 innings to a 2.33 ERA. In 1978, he'd appear in 62 games. His ERA would creep up to 3.07, which would really be the highest of that whole run. But he also did strike out 96 batters in 88 innings, of course, in an era where striking out more than one batter an inning was still something notable. And he recorded 11 saves that year, which led the team. 1979 would probably prove to be his best year, both by traditional metrics with his 1.77 ERA, by advanced metrics with his 3.3 WAR, according to Baseball Reference, which is a pretty massively impressive number for a reliever, and personal accomplishments in that he made the All-Star team, the one and only time in his career. Zambito, on May 1st of 79, he blew a game to the Cardinals, which moved his ERA up to 3.31. By the time he gave up another earned run on July 21st, so 2.5 months and about 40 innings later, his ERA was down to an Aaron Loop-esque 0.95. And in fact, he saved some of his best work in that run for a incredibly moribund 1979 Mets team. He made 3 straight appearances against the Mets in June, actually across 2 different series. He didn't, three in Shea, then the Astros went elsewhere, then the Mets visited Houston, and Zambito didn't pitch in the intermediate series. But at any rate, in 3 straight appearances against the Mets in June, he threw 11 scoreless innings, recording a win and a save. And while he was in several playoffs, as we'll get to, the All-Star game, of course, was a very memorable experience for him, one of his career highlights. The 1979 All-Star game was in the Seattle Kingdom. It's really the first All-Star game I really remember watching personally. In remembering it, Zambito said, you know, Chubb Feeney, the National League president, came in and gave a pep talk like it was the 7th game of the World Series. It was a real rivalry. Tommy Lasorda was stoking us up in the dugout. And yeah, I was very young, definitely in that time you really only knew your National League players, and seeing American League players was a treat. I mean, obviously you're in New York, there's a team across town, and you know of them, but it was still exciting to see those players. And Joe Zambito would get in his All-Star game, make an appearance, and pitch really well, and to note how more competitive it was, he threw 2/3 scoreless innings around an intentional walk, which I just found amusing. There were like several intentional walks in this All-Star game just to mark how competitive it was. I can't really imagine that happening in the current iteration of the All-Star game. But Zambito retired Reggie Jackson and George Brett with runners on the corners to preserve the score at 6-5. The American League was leading at the time, but by quelling that rally and not allowing the American League to score, Zambito paved the way for another native Brooklynite, Lee Mazzilli, to tie the game in the eighth inning with a home run. Mazzilli would then go on to bring home the winning run in the ninth inning with a bases-loaded walk off of Ron Guidry in the ninth inning, but would somehow still lose the MVP award to the strong-armed Dave Parker, who did have two impressive outfield assists, but in my young life, I remember that being the first time I felt a Met was unfairly snubbed. Wouldn't be the last time. But Zambito was so good in 79, he even earned a down-ballot MVP vote or two, coming in 21st place in the MVP voting. But the season would certainly end in professional, or at least team disappointment, as his Astros came up a game and a half short of the Cincinnati Reds for the NL West title in 1979. Now, 1980s for the Astros saw a season colored by tragedy for the team, in that All-Star and possible Cy Young winner that year, J.R. Richard, suffered a stroke that effectively ended his career. But Zambito found more personal success, and the team as well, as his 2.19 ERA, while actually the highest he recorded between 79 and 81, still earned him one third-place Cy Young Award vote, placing him in a tie for fifth that year. But more importantly for him, one would guess, is that his team won a one-game play-in tiebreaker over the Dodgers to claim the 1980 NL West title, putting Zambito in the playoffs for the first time, as the Astros would meet the Phillies in the NLCS, then a five-game affair, and in what would become probably one of the most entertaining and probably the best NLCS up to that point in time. And perhaps the best one, at least until 1986, where the Astros also suffered a disappointing defeat for them. But that best-of-five series went five games, the final four all being decided in extra innings. The Astros had a 2-1 lead going into Game 4, in which Zambito took a tough loss in Game 4. The Astros were leading 2-0 going into the eighth inning, looking to clinch the franchise's first World Series berth. Vern Rule and Dave Smith combined in the top of the eighth to allow the Phillies to tie it up. Zambito came into a pretty thankless first and third, no-one-out situation in a 2-2 game and surrendered only a sacrifice fly. The Astros tied the game at 3, but Zambito pitched 2 more innings and eventually surrendered 2 runs in the top of the 10th, seeing the Astros lose 5-3 in that game. Then in Game 5, the gassed Zambito would record one big out in what was a costly 8th inning. The Astros again would surrender a lead in the 8th inning, this time a 5-2 lead. Nolan Ryan, who had been cruising to that point in time, surrendered 3 runs in the 8th. Zambito would record an out in that 8th inning, where the Astros would eventually give up 2 more runs. Falling behind 7-5, they would tie it at 7, but lose a second straight extra inning game at home, 8-7, for a crushing series defeat to the eventual world champion Phillies. 1981, of course, was a strike-shortened season. He made 49 relief appearances, once again with an ERA below 2, a 1.84 ERA over 63 and two-thirds innings. The Astros won the second half of that split season and made the first ever National League Division Series against the Dodgers to settle the NL West and move on to the Championship Series. The Astros took Game 1 3-1. Game 2 went into the 11th in a scoreless tie. Zambito pitched a scoreless top of the 11th and earned a victory when the Astros scored in the bottom of the 11th to take a 2-0 series lead. But once again, the Astros would leave heartbroken. The Dodgers would win Game 3 6-1. Zambito would come on in the 8th and give up 3 runs in two-thirds of an inning in that game to turn a close game into a blowout, and he would not get into Games 4 and 5 as the Dodgers would come back to win the series 3-2. I kind of forgot how, with all the success the Astros have had since they moved to the American League, the kind of that there was a bit of heartbreak and pathos to that organization that we helped contribute to 6 years later, 5 years later. We're on 1981 now, aren't we? At any rate, 1982, like, it would continue to be more of the same for Joe Sambito, relief pitching dominance. He made 9 appearances, gave up just 1 earned run in 12 and two-thirds innings, earning 4 saves before a sore elbow would curtail that season. And this was the early days of Tommy John surgery, so Sambito did not know what his doc what his recovery would look like. His doctor didn't either, if his career would recover. And it would take a while to, and it would really essentially never be the same. 9 months after the surgery, Sambito was still feeling numbness in his the fingers in his hand. They had to go back in and clean out scar tissue from the surgery, and he missed the entire 1983 season. And when he returned in 1984, he could tell that his fastball velocity really wasn't there. Kind of gutted it out to the tune of a 3.02 ERA, but his stuff clearly wasn't what it was, and he was being used in lower leverage situations and than he had been in the past. And even spring training in 85, the stuff still didn't seem to be there, so the Astros asked him to accept an assignment to AAA Tucson to kind of build back his strength, but he had had enough service time at that point in time to refuse an assignment to the minors, which he did. The Astros granted him his release, and the young up-and-coming 1985 New York Mets signed the New York native on April 26th of 1985, giving him the chance to pitch in his native state. Sambito was excited about the opportunity. He was quoted as saying, at the time, my mother was still living there. Their home was only 20 miles from Shea, and he was just going to stay with her until he could get settled in, and he hoped to get back to what he was and settle in New York. Sambito's debut and finale with the Mets are very memorable games, and we'll discuss them both on, even though he only made 8 appearances, on April 28th, 1985, Sambito made his debut with the Mets, his debut at Shea in a New York uniform. He did hurl a scoreless seventh inning in a game in which the Mets and Pirates were tied 4-4. One of my favorite and one of the first Met books I remember reading, probably people who know how much I love Keith Hernandez won't be surprised, was If at First. So I dug it out off the shelf in preparing for this, and in recounting the game, Keith Hernandez mentioned that Sambito was happy to be back with the Mets, but observed, you know, his career is on the line. He hasn't pitched in a meaningful situation in a couple of years, and 3 years ago he was one of the best in the league. Today, and then just an ellipsis, and Hernandez's in-game analysis was that after Bill Madlock singled with two outs, he asked him at first if Joe was throwing hard. From Keith's vantage, it didn't appear so, but no, Madlock agreed, and unfortunately, that seemed to be the case. Sambito stuff just didn't come back to where it once was. But he got through that scoreless inning, and the game would remain 4-4 for 11 more innings until the Mets won the game 5-4 in the bottom of the 18th. Now, this game is much less memorable to people than the famed 1986 game where Ray Knight got kicked out for decking Eric Davis, and you know the lineup shenanigans that followed in the wake of that. But it was a lot of fun in its own right. In a bit of a prelude to managing that game, Davey Johnson got in some practice hiding an inexperienced or less capable outfielder, as multiple times over extra innings he shifted outfielder slash backup catcher Clint Hurdle and pinch hitter slash no longer fit for outfield duty Rusty Staub, trying to move Rusty Staub to the opposite field as, you know, the team ran out of players, as will happen in a long extra inning National League affair. And despite the efforts, much like I believe Orozco made a put out in the outfield in that Cincinnati game, of course the ball would find Rusty, and he made a pretty decent play down the right field line on a fly ball in one of the extra innings that I remember well, and I remember the joy of the announcers when he made the play. And perhaps most notably in relief of Sambito and Sisk and all the other pitchers who appeared, special kudos to reliever Tom Gorman, who threw 7 scoreless innings to record an incredibly well-deserved win in that 18-inning game. Unfortunately for Joe Sambito, that one appearance where he got through a scoreless inning, although the professional hitters Hernandez and Matlock could see he didn't have his stuff, that would be about the peak of his stay with the New York Mets. He had only 7 more appearances, most of them dreadful. One of those early appearances, he gave up 2 runs in 1 inning, combining with Doug Sisk to kind of put a game on ice, in which Fernando Valenzuela outdueled Dwight Gooden, Gooden recording his 3rd of only 4 losses that season, turning a late 2-1 game into a 5-1, and ultimately, I think, 6-2 or 3 Dodger win. It was probably the last time Sambito got in a game that was in any way late or close in any less than low leverage situation. And of course, the Mets didn't fall short by much that year, so even those early games counted. And probably not a game they would have won, but they did rally in the 9th off of Valenzuela and, you know, for a 2-3-1 game instead of a 6-1 game, maybe it could have been different. But alas, no. After that game, Sambito mostly got in blowout games. You know, I guess the Mets were hoping he would find his form or pitch back into form, but he wasn't getting to pitch that often. Culminating in his last appearance with the Mets, where it's just one of the more memorable losses in Mets history, which I know is really saying something. On June 11th of 1985, the 31-22 second place New York Mets took on the 20-34 Philadelphia Phillies. The Mets were struggling with injuries to their pitching staff at the time, so the aforementioned Tom Gorman made a spot start, giving up 6 runs in a 3rd of an inning. He was relieved by Calvin Schiraldi, who did him one worse, surrendering 10, count them, 10 runs in an inning and a 3rd, leaving the Mets down a mere 16-0 after 2 innings of play. In the 9-run first inning for the Phillies, Von Hayes became the first player in history to hit 2 home runs in the first inning of the game, and if not starting, certainly cementing my memory of him as a terrible, unforgivable Met killer. Whether great or bad, the Mets have always been blessed with fantastic announcers, and Bob Murphy and Gary Thorne in the radio booth were on that night, Murphy noting after the second inning, if this were a prize fight, Gary, they'd stop it. Then later on, after the Mets scored 7 runs, of course, across the 3rd through 5th innings, Bob Murphy noted after the score was cut to 16-7, you know, Gary, were it not for the first 15 runs, this would be a ballgame. After the then, in my opinion, fairly maligned Doug Sisk, shockingly threw 2 1/3 scoreless innings of relief in relief of Schiraldi, Sambito came on and matched Schiraldi, allowing 10 runs of his own over 3 innings. But hey, at least he did retire Von Hayes twice, because, you know, he was tough on lefties till the very end. I remember watching this game. I mean, I remember obsessively watching the Mets in 84, 85, 86, and thereafter, and oh god, it was brutal. And I could come up with all sorts of things to say, but again, I'll go to if at first. I couldn't say it better than Keith, who just said, in the bottom of the fifth, the Phillies slammed Sambito. Watching her career go down the drain is a sad sight. At the conclusion of the 26-7 game, where the Mets brought Jesse Orozco in for the last inning, ostensibly from what I could read, to try and prevent the Phillies from setting a record for runs scored in a game. The 26-7 combined at the time was the most runs scored by 2 teams in a game. I think the 26 runs just came short of a record for runs allowed in a game. But insofar as the subject of our podcast, with a 12.66 ERA and 8 walks against 3 strikeouts over 10 2/3 innings, the Mets had seen enough, and much like the Astros at the beginning of 85, asked the veteran to accept a demotion to AAA to get his skills back. They did promise him they'd bring him up as soon as they could, and this time Zambito accepted the assignment. Unfortunately, he couldn't find his form in Tidewater in 1985. He threw 20 and two-thirds innings, hit a 4.35 ERA, allowed 31 hits in those 20 and two-thirds innings, and he got tired of waiting despite his struggles and asked for his release in mid-August, and the Mets granted it on August 23rd, clearly not trusting him as they were in the thick of an intense pennant race. Zambito feared his career might be over, but he wasn't quite ready for that. He hooked up with the Red Sox and in spring training of 86 made the team. In a perhaps self-deprecating note, he was grateful that the Tigers were near them in spring training. The Red Sox, he said, played them every day, and they were loaded with lefties. And even then, I had no problem getting lefties out, so that's how I made the team. Again, while he had never been a lefty specialist, he was effective against both. He was that good of a reliever. By 86, that was, and again, that wasn't really a thing, having loogies back then, pre-three-batter rule, just wasn't considered efficient. But in 1986, he was much more effective against left-handers. He held them to a .200 batting average. Right-handers hit him to a .368 tune that year. As Heath put it, he just never got his fastball back after Tommy John, but he was able to get his breaking ball sharp again, and he adjusted to a lower three-quarter arm angle that kind of allowed him to continue to be effective against lefties. He finished the 1986 regular season with the Red Sox with a 2-0 record and 12 saves, which was shocking to me, with his 4.84 ERA. And I think a lovely anecdote, and probably something that'll endear him to Met fans' hearts more than his performance with us in 85, Zambito said his most memorable moment as a Red Sox during the regular season was getting to play with Tom Seaver, who he grew up idolizing in New York, and he actually recorded the save in Seaver's first Red Sox win on July 1st, 1986, which he was so excited by, he actually retrieved the ball to save it as a kind of personal memento. Now, as you may have heard, the 1986 Red Sox made the playoffs that year, and they won the ALCS in a grueling seven-game series over the California Angels, effectively a loogie, or only in lefty-leveraged situations. In the playoffs, Zambito appeared in three games in the LCS, threw only two-thirds of an inning, allowed only one hit, but the Red Sox are victorious, and for the first time in his career, the 34-year-old left-hander was headed to the World Series. Waiting for him there would be his team from the previous season, the New York Metropolitans. Zambito came in the eighth inning of Game 3 after the Mets had already strafed Oil Can Boyd and had a comfortable 6-1 lead. He started the top of the eighth, surrendered a single to Darryl Strawberry, and an RBI double to Ray Knight those are the only two batters he faced as the Mets extended their lead to 7-1 and got back into the series with their 7-1 victory to cut their deficit to 2-1. And he would not appear again until fateful for the Red Sox, Game 7. In the bottom of the seventh, with the score tied 3-3, Ray Knight led off the seventh against Calvin Schiraldi with a clutch home run to put the Mets ahead to stay 4-3. Schiraldi would face three more batters, surrendering a pair of singles and a sacrifice bunt before yielding to Zambito. He would intentionally walk Mookie Wilson, unintentionally walk Wally Backman to load the bases, and surrender a sacrifice fly to Keith Hernandez, which extended the Mets' lead to 6-3. That would be the last batter he'd face in the World Series, as he'd yield to Bob Stanley, who would retire Gary Carter. The Red Sox would cut it to 6-5 in the top of the eighth, but of course would get no closer. The Mets would win 8-5 and secure the second world championship in their franchise's history. Zimbido would return to Boston for 1987, which would be his final season in the majors. He would struggle mightily, 2-6 with a 6.93 ERA in 47 games, only 37 and two-thirds innings. He fittingly tried to latch on with the Astros in 1988 after being released by the Sox after the 87 season. The Astros invited him to spring training. He accepted it, and their deal was if his arm felt good, if he made the team, great. If he didn't, he'd call it a career and go home quietly. He did actually spend some time in AAA Tucson hoping to get a call up, but he didn't and eventually walked away. A little before the All-Star break, he was starting to feel pain in his shoulder, and he just decided that if he wasn't up in the big leagues by the All-Star break, he was just going to retire, and so he officially did in July of 1988. He quickly segued into the agent side of the business. He had been represented by the Hendricks brothers, Randy and Alan, while he was a player. He was a personable, gregarious player and persona. And the Hendricks had already indicated during his career that they saw a spot for him in their organization after he retired, which he embraced by September, embarking on a 30-plus year career, post-baseball career, as a player representative. For his professional career, Zimbido had a record of 37-38 with a 3.03 ERA. He got in 461 regular season games in his career. Again, made only 5 starts. He did record 84 saves over his 629 innings pitched, with a career WAR of 8.7, according to Baseball Reference. His stellar and at times dominant 5-year run with the Astros from 77 to 81, of course, was very notable and very impressive, and his tenure with the Mets and Red Sox did drag that WAR down a bit. In fact, in 10 and two-thirds innings with the Mets, he recorded a negative 0.9 BWAR, which I guess will happen with a 12.66 ERA. But though he was unable to recover from injury and become the pitcher he was with the 1985 Mets, he did appear in a couple of memorable games, and perhaps more importantly for Met fans, appeared in a couple of memorable games in the 1986 playoffs on the other side of the field in which the Mets emerged victorious. And for that, I deem Joe Zimbido unformidable. Thanks for taking the time to listen to Unformidable. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, WOLFFRR, and the show is at Unformidable. Thank you, and as always, let's go Mets!